Well, good morning, everyone. Brett Henderson here, founder of Strategic Wealth Endeavor and the Veteran Entrepreneur Masterclass. Super excited to have a new guest today, Joe Franke. Joe Franke, 30 years experience as an Army officer, and he's been helping veterans through transitions for almost as long as well. So, but you're only 25 years old, so you do a lot in a little bit of time, Joe. So welcome to have you here, brother. How are you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm doing great. I'm jamming.
Yeah, you are jamming. So I will share you and I. One thing I like to throw out there for all of our listeners before we jump into it, just a simple, blunt question. Are you a client of mine?
No, I'm not.
Not yet, right? That's the answer. Not yet, but hopefully we'll be. There we go.
I am a huge fan, though.
I appreciate that. Well, we can turn a raging fan into a raging client would be awesome. So that being said, you and I connected on LinkedIn about 2 months ago.
Right.
And we just had a short conversation. Well, I tried to have a short 15-minute conversation, and I think it lasted almost an hour.
Yeah, we had a good time.
And I'll say for our listeners who are out there who are also veteran entrepreneurs, if you're looking for someone with a calming voice, Joe, I just enjoyed the conversation, and you kind of had that Papa Smurf voice. I don't even know what Papa Smurf voice sounds like anymore, but you were just calming and soothing to me, so I just wanted to keep talking to you. And so that's why we went from a 15-minute gut check call to an hour. But I definitely enjoy the conversation. I love what you're doing. And that's why I thought it'd be great for you to be on the podcast because of everything you have done in your career, everything you're doing still in your career, and how you're helping the veteran community. So I just first off wanted to say thank you for your 30 years giving back to the country and then another almost 30 years giving back to veterans on top of that. So thank you very much for your help and service.
It's an honor to do so.
Well, do me a quick favor, again, knowing that your resume, especially your military resume, would take the entire podcast. Why don't you give us a quick summary, kind of just where you were, what you did in the Army?
I went to the military academy a month out of high school. That was a big wake-up call because I came from an agricultural community in South Texas. My first exposure was really that. I didn't have anybody that kind of warned me on what that was going to be like. 4 years at the academy, commissioned in the infantry, did mechanized infantry, airborne infantry, air assault infantry, and special operations, Green Beret. So I did 14 years as a warfighter, you know, the tip of the spear. Then I decided to pivot, you know, when they weren't going to let you be out in the field and operate anymore. I wanted to learn the business side of the Army. So I pivoted into Quartermaster Corps logistics as a promotable major to lieutenant colonel. I had to be counseled by two general officers that told me I was an idiot, you know.
For I was going
to
say, yeah.
And the next thing I know, 2 years later, I was commanding a multifunctional battalion, and about 2.5 years after that, a multifunctional brigade. So must not have been a bad decision.
I'd say so.
So last assignment in the Army was as the chief of staff and installation commander at the Army and Air Force Exchange Service. And I thought, well, okay, I'll learn the commercial side of logistics. But 9/11 happened 2 months after I signed in, and I spent the next 3.5 years doing my part to help modify the organization to live and operate as economically as we could in a post 9/11 world.
Okay. And I was in during 9/11. So I remember when that happened. Actually, that was a crazy time. I think I remember we didn't go home for 2-3 days. I was in Camp Lejeune and we just sat at our desks. And I remember just going back and forth on email with my other peers and friends like around the country that were also in, and no one knew what the hell was going on. Everyone's frozen. Everyone's like, what are we doing? What are we doing? It was just an interesting time when that happened.
It was different.
Yes. So when after 30 years and being successful two sides as a warfighter and supporting warfighters, what was the thought process when you realized after year 28 and 29, like this road's not going to go much further. This game's kind of over. What was your thought when that started to sink in?
Well, the toughest time was you're coming up on 30 years. You're going to be thrown out if you don't process that, right? So it was really difficult for me because I was in the middle of summer 2004 is when I, you know, retired from the Army. But, you know, I was still sending individuals from military, reserve, active duty people as individuals into combat theater, you know, in support of Army and Air Force Exchange Service operations. You were head down, full in, you know, there wasn't this, okay, let me, like they have today where, hey, you know, you can take 6 months and you can kind of work your way out. So that's not a criticism. I think that's exactly what's needed because, you know, I kind of reached my retirement date, had a ceremony, and, you know, next thing I know, I was on terminal leave, and away we went. And that's when I started doing what I learned in all those transition classes, putting the resume together, you know, and all of that.
So when you
stuff.
Were transitioning out, oh, sorry, back continue,
that,
please.
Yeah, back at that time, you know, and I've told this story and people said, you know, well, how'd you find a job? I said, well, I went to the newspaper.
Tell me more.
Yeah. So the newspaper in 2004 was still a major source of where you found jobs because they actually posted that stuff in ads, both nationally and locally. And so what you were trying to do, you had to walk around, try to get people, talk to people, try to get recruiters to see you, paper resumes, you know, because at that time, you weren't just shipping resumes. And LinkedIn was in its absolute baby infancy. You know, it came around in 2003 and I got on it after I got out in 2004. The big shocker was 52 years old at that point in time. I was trying to, you know, get into corporate America and I just beat my head against the wall. So it was the darkest time in my life. You're going through rejection. Nobody tells you why. All that kind of stuff. And then one day somebody said, hey, Joe, you know, I'm not supposed to do this, but I really want to. And I said, what's that? And he said, you know, you are the perfect guy. You interviewed for this project manager job. You have no doubt that you can run a crew and a team, get anything done. And I said, okay. And he said, but look, you've handled more money than the CEO. You've handled more people than the CEO. You could take my job tomorrow. And so therefore, you know, we're not going to hire you. I said, well, you know, it's funny in the military, I was always trying to get the people much smarter than me on a team to get the mission done. Right. Because it's not about how you rack and stack. It was really about, hey, how do we get the mission done most economically? And, you know, for a Marine and Army guy, that means blood. And he said, look, Joe, what I think you ought to do is go out here, find some guys putting a deal together and use all these multifunctional skills and your sweat equity, kind of get in and work your way into that. I said, well, I've been interviewing a lot of places and, you know, I don't get any calls. And he said, well, I'm sharing that with you. And, you know, I could really get in trouble for that, but I'm just trying to help you. And so that was some of the best advice I had gotten. So as far as my transition time, it was absolutely the darkest days in my career. So you're there with West Point education, a certification in civil engineering and 3 master's degrees. And well, we don't have any need for you. And
you go from being an asset and just an asset and everyone wanting you to be on the team because all the knowledge experience you bring to all of a sudden you could be a potential threat. That's what it sounds like. And they were intimidated by your experience, intimidated by your resume, and intimidated by everything you've done and accomplished and could do. So they were threatened by you. Did you read it that way at that time, or did it take a while to think in?
It took a while to really, you know, internalize that. You know, you get smarter over time and you can kind of look back and say, wow. And so one of the things I was working on a cooperative joint venture, you know, with some Chinese partners, with a group of individuals here in Houston. And what I learned from that experience is we needed people that had experience in China that had done wastewater projects or somebody that. So we did what you normally do. You go out to a retained executive recruiter. You say, hey, these are what we need, you know, all that kind of stuff. And 3 to 4 months later, they came back and said, hey, we can't find anybody like that. Kept the money, 1/3 of the money, and said we did our best effort. And so that's when I really learned how to use LinkedIn. I'd gotten on it in 2004. And so in 2005, I said, well, you know, I'm going to have to find my own people. Well, the beautiful thing about it is you could just run a search in there and find China, you know, engineer experience, that kind of stuff. And you get a list and you run that person down, call them. And say, look, you know, I don't know if you're the right guy, but I mean, LinkedIn says you have experience in China. This is what we're looking for. Well, you know, I'm not the right guy, but here's 3 guys.
Oh.
You know, they weren't on LinkedIn, right? But hey, here's 3 guys, you know, that you ought to call because I know they're looking. And so what I ended up doing was just learning how to use LinkedIn backwards and forwards. Didn't really go back out to the recruiting world. We just did what we needed to do internally. Now, if LinkedIn was the way it is today, and I'm coming out of the military, then what LinkedIn offered me to help military people is if they populate what they brought to the table, and then I would help translate that into hiring manager vernacular.
Okay. So you're shifting now from what you went through in your experience and learning, because LinkedIn is just a tool. It's just a tool. And
it's just a
tool. And you can weaponize it, or it can just be there, right? And it can be an asset, and it can be a liability. And your post can be an asset and liability. Actually, this is really good then. I think so for our audience, veteran entrepreneurs, it's taken me probably 10 years to have a good, really good grasp of LinkedIn and using LinkedIn. You and I connected on LinkedIn and how to use LinkedIn. It seems right now that there are these gurus, which I've been approached by, and everyone asks for money, give us a little bit of money. We're going to get you all these appointments, which all these calls, we're going to do all these clients. We're going to do it for just a little bit of money. And everyone's happy to tell you, this is what you do. And most of it is just using a form of automation, and you put in some scripted messages, and it's a machine that starts spitting stuff out there. And it happened to me today. I was going through my inbox, my notifications, and seeing connection requests, and trying to see most are business development. It's mostly sales reps trying to reach out, want to sell me something, which is fine because we're all sales make the world go around. Nothing wrong with that, right? And if you add value, that's why you get a sale. There's some phenomenal things to buy. But then I hit a couple accept, and then it starts. Just the automated boom, pitch, connect, pitch. And I'm like, you have no idea who I am. I guess if you're doing the volume play, you know, throw 1,000 things at the wall and see what sticks. Maybe you're going to find that 3% that's actually looking for what you're offering at that time, but you're turning off 97% of those connections. And so what you're doing, I think, is very applaudable, and it's needed, especially the veteran community, how to use LinkedIn effectively.
Well, that's, for example, you know, I get lots of invitations. You do too. And so I always go back. If I haven't met or known the person, I go back with, hey, it's an intelligence gathering tool too. I say, hey, how did you find me? What motivated you to reach out? Here's my calendar. Please schedule a 15-minute connection call. Just very nice, all that stuff. And so that's my way of separating the bots. Okay, because, you know, bot cannot pick up the phone and get on your calendar and call you. That screens about 83%.
I'd say 93%.
For me, looking at the data, it's about 83%. Okay. I don't hear from people anymore. So that means that the machine says, oh, well, you know, now we got to do something the machine can't. So anyway, but then when I do see somebody schedule and do the call, then we have, a good 15-minute call, and we introduce ourselves, and, you know, goes from there.
I like that. So what are you?
Those are worthy.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. So for the veteran entrepreneur or veteran that's coming out, and I think there's two different buckets here. There's the salty veteran that thinks they're just going to take over a company day one, right? They're going to do something day one. No skill set. They're coming from the military mindset, military experience. I have no idea how corporate America works, but hey, I'm a leader. I can lead people anywhere. Make me the CEO, make me the president. What are your thoughts, or how many of your hard chargers come out with that mentality when you engage them versus, hey, I'm in a new environment, you know, in the military, my role, I was a 10 in corporate America. It's a new role for me. My role is a 0-1 because I have no experience, and I want to build that. And I have the fortitude and the aptitude to eat my own humble pie and realize, yes, in the military, I'm coming out as a 10 because I've been doing it 30 years, 20 years, even 5, 6 years, 4 years. I got it down, but now I'm in a new world. I wasn't operating before. I don't have the experience. My role is a 0. It's not a 10. And I got to build that up. So are you seeing when people reach out to you, is it more the latter? Like, I got it. I can do this. No problem. Or how many actually have the fortitude and humility to say, I don't know what the hell I'm doing out here. Help me.
You get both. It's a normal random population, right? So I had dealing with one colonel that wanted me to get him a job in a utility. I said, well, what do you want to do in the utility? And he said, well, you know, I want to be able to lead and, you know, manage an organization. And, you know, I'm just saying, I don't really think that's going to happen, you know, because, you know, you're trying to go into a vertical that's kind of closed, right? They take other people from the same vertical, but not too many people come in, you know, way from the outside, unless the best ones that I've seen are Marines, Navy, and Army Corps of Engineers, the engineers in the military, because the engineering in Exxon, the engineering handling big projects, you know, handling money, all that kind of stuff, it reads almost exactly, your resume of doing that reads almost exactly like that.
Right.
That's why, you know, an Air Force pilot that's multi-engine rated is not going to have a problem, you know, getting into the airlines, because one, it's absolutely short nowadays because of, you know, they've kind of got that age bump that they're trying to sort through. So everybody's short. So it just depends on what the requirements are and what you need to do. So I always encourage people. The nice thing about the profile is if you can articulate what you did in the military, the profile gives you the ability to tell story after story after story that you solved problems. Because when companies and individuals come to me and say, Joe, you know, they don't come and say, Joe, I need a CFO. No, they come to me and say, Joe, I need somebody to take over the finances and we're going down. So I need the cost cutter, you know, somebody that's just experienced in cost cutting, right? And they have that suite of skills. There's very few that I've found. There are some that have the ones that can grow an organization as well as take it down. In other words, you know, constrain as opposed to, you say, well, yep. People say, well, why is that? Well, because the person that's grown organizations, they have relationships with private equity. They have the relationships with the bankers. They have all the places to go to the investment banks, you know, all that kind of stuff, you know, and that kind of stuff matters, you know.
It totally matters. Well, I was going to say, while we were chatting, you triggered a story that you shared with me when we had our call a couple months ago. And that was regarding, I think an incident happened, was around the coal, and there was a bunch of stuff going on. And I think you were tagged because you can make a complex situation with a bunch of random organizations work together cohesively very smoothly.
Yeah. So I was a division director of joint logistics. And so the coal happened on our watch at U.S. Atlantic Command. And then we had the Kursk Russian submarine incident as well. And those were complex, you know, projects because they're unplanned. When you go to look for how to rescue a Russian submarine, and I had the clearances at the time, you know, there's nothing in that file.
No, there's not SOP for that.
You can bet there is one now.
Yeah, that's a certain depth and everything. Yeah, I'm definitely sure.
So you're trying to do policy in the middle of a rescue operation. Because you couldn't do anything without Russians' permission.
That, I think, if you share that story when you're trying to be interviewed for a regular company here in the United States, I could see how that could be intimidating. For a veteran entrepreneur then who's out there now and is in business or has maybe 5-6 years under their belt and they've made a successful transition and they're trying to figure out which direction to take their business, what are you seeing as number one challenges for those entrepreneurs today?
The challenges, I think, for an entrepreneur is, look, the pandemic caused a crisis. Supply chain is a crisis right now. Chips are a crisis, you know, depending on where you're at. With crisis comes opportunity, okay? So, in fact, the Chinese script for opportunity and crisis only differentiate by one slight brushstroke at the bottom corner or something like that. A Marine was showing me
that one
day. Oh,
really? That's interesting.
And so, in other words, you know, you need that crisis in order to have opportunity. And so my point to the entrepreneurs is, okay, you got to look outside, you know, the box, and the people that look outside the box adjust faster than your peers are going to be better. Because if you're a follower, you know, you get what's left, you know, which is great in a bull market, right? Because there's plenty of stuff for everybody. But when you know, things get constrained. Those that are not efficient or not led well, you know, they go to the back of the bus.
Or as you said, they follow, they're not able to recognize the opportunity because they've got the blinders on.
Right.
And I can't tell you how many times, like, I try and run my practice differently than, like, I'm in a very saturated market. I think there's 300,000 financial advisors in this country at any one given time. I'm the only one with a red dot for a logo. I'll tell you that. And there's been several times I'll say it is challenging for an entrepreneur because as an entrepreneur myself,
right,
you have an idea. You think differently. You're trying to do something different. You want to differentiate yourself. You don't want to be a commodity in a commoditized market. You don't want to be like everyone else. You don't want to say the same thing. You don't want to do the same thing. And when you do stuff differently, the masses who are successful already doing the status quo are like, no, you can't. Oh, they poo-poo you, especially if you have your own idea and it's not their idea. It's really hard to find collaborative peers that work with you and that truly want to help share in your success versus those which are threatened and or are at the same time can be intimidated by and see you try to do certain things that they want to bring you down because they're just not the right person, not the right peer group, not the right support structure you should be chatting with. So what would you say the importance of surrounding yourself with peers that are positive and can support you in and help enhance your creativity and thinking outside the box versus those that are stifling and want to, no, get back in your box. Just play in the sandbox and this is where you belong and this is how it works. Just stay here. So I'm just sitting here when I was at UBS for 10 years. I had all these ideas. We could do this and we could do that and we could put this and this. No. Here's the box. Stay in the box. Well, Brett, stay in the box. Brett, stay in the box. And the more I was told to stay in the box, that just makes me want to get out of the box that much more, right? That's just who I am. Like, tell me not to do something. If you want me to do something, tell me not to do it. And I will do everything in my power to do it just to show you I can because you told me not to.
You know, if we're trying to get a pig out of a pen, you chase it away from the gate and it'll go out the gate.
That's exactly it. Well, I guess I'm a pig in a pen. I've been called worse things in life. I can relate to that comment very well. I don't know if I should own that or not, but I just did. So that's good. So for you then, let's go back to your darkest hour, because I think that's what makes this podcast a little different, special, is the relatability to all the listeners. We all had that moment when we're getting out. Maybe not if you're on the aviation side, you're a pilot, you know you're going to United or American, you know you got a job. It's not that scary. You just take off one uniform, put on another, and it's maybe for those. But for a lot of us, you are going from structure, what to wear, what to do, where to go, where to eat, what to sleep. Like everything was done for you to now go figure it out on your own. And when I came out again, you were completely on your own. I had my friends who had also gotten out, but my community that stayed in, you were blackballed, right? Because you're leaving the military. And who are you to leave versus putting in a career? So the crew that stayed behind, I abandoned them. So once you, and when I was in, at least when I made the decision to get out, you know, I was blackballed by my peers, so to speak, for getting out. I think that mindset's definitely changed. And now that most of them are veterans too, now where you are now, it's not just 4 years in. So it's a different time frame and different mindset. But what are your thoughts on that?
So you're much better off. You know, what the civilian world is looking for is the military person with 4 to 8 years experience. If you're an officer, it's a junior military officer. You've gone and shown you can be successful. You're trainable and that kind of stuff. Their mindset is, okay, if I bring this person in, what's their 15-year bandwidth? You know, if I'm going to make this investment, the idea is if we do everything right, you know, they're going to stay with us over a longer period of time. And naturally, if they're successful in the organization, I mean, we as an organization harvest, right? If you're going to have an employee, if they can't generate, or the team collectively can't generate 3x times their salary, then hey, you know, we need to adjust here.
ROI, return on investment. And that's what you are. I mean, we are a commoditized investment as an employer. You're looking for people that can help you multiply your own revenue, right?
Absolutely.
So here's something. Here's a thought. When we're interviewing, and even when you were interviewing 20 plus years ago, and people tell me about what you did, and you've got this deep resume experience. How prudent is the advice to try and stop the conversation? Say, look, I'm here for a reason. You guys have a need. What are you guys really trying to do? and then shift it back to them, what their goals are, what they're trying to accomplish, what the problem they have. Like they're trying to hire, they're hiring for a reason, right? Or you have your own business. You want to go somewhere. You recognize a gap or deficiency or a need with your business. So you're trying to find a certain person to help fill that gap or need. How prudent is it if you're that person to come and have the fortitude to say, okay, I'm here for a reason. You guys have a need. What is it really? And just get into the nitty gritty and start doing and start thinking and start asking questions. So rather than sit there and brag about yourself, have the mental fortitude, toughness, and awareness to realize, hey, they're here. They want you for a reason. They're looking for someone for a reason. What is that really? And how soon can we get down to it and just start talking brass tacks about ways to help them? Like, and having that conversation versus tell them how wonderful you are, really have the fortitude to say, hey, what are you guys really trying to do? Can I help? Let's figure it out together and just jump in.
I would say in general, the interview is there for two parties. The one party seeking employment and the employer seeking someone to be employed. So you as the interviewee, I always say you have a responsibility for 50% of the questions. Because you won't know what the structure of the interview is because it's going to be their personal preference. And why shouldn't it be? They're in charge. A lot of times what they're going to really try to do is get into a conversation just like we're having and take it along the ways that's very comfortable and they can discover what they want, you know, shifting the conversation back and forth. But if you reach a point in time where they're kind of finished with that, it's your job to interview them. Not every place is the best place to work. I remember one time way back, I was helping my son and he said, well, you know, they want an interview. And I said, well, go take it. And he said, well, I don't want to work for these guys. I already know that. And I said, well, they've offered the interview. You don't know what you don't know until you go to the interview. And if you don't want to work with them or, you know, that's fine. But that interview is you're taking your sword or your saber. And they're bringing their stone and your job is to sharpen your saber. Yeah. Listen, nobody wants to do an interview. I mean, that's somebody taking their time. You know, they're not producing while they're interviewing. And for you to get to an interview, it's a big thing because now more and more since the time I've got out, more and more of those cuts are made, you know, based on, you know, what you've written. A lot of it's what's in your LinkedIn profile. You've got to be able to tell your story in the profile. And what I work with is a lot of people that don't have their story told in their LinkedIn profile. And the reason that's important is if you're in a noun and verb war with your peers, whoever your peers are, you're in a noun and verb war. So the more good nouns you have and the more good verbs you have, the better off you're going to be. And so how do you get nouns and verbs? Well, you need sentences and sentences fit into paragraphs and paragraphs tell stories. Basically the same story that you would tell in an interview about you solving a problem can be embedded, you know, in your LinkedIn profile in any one of a number of places. And I had this guy tell me one time, he says, well, Joe, I mean, you know, what do you mean by solving problems? And I said, well, you're in the Marine Corps. Did anybody ever give you an order? And they said, well, yeah, I got them all the time. Well, when they gave you an order, that's a problem as defined. And that's a task, condition, and standard that they're going to hold you to.
Yeah.
So you either solved the problem or got your butt turned up, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. You either accomplished a mission you didn't.
Or in some cases, if it was beyond any learning thing, you get fired.
So with that, though, you made some good points there. Going back to what you shared about having a good LinkedIn profile and having that as a screener, so to speak, what would you also talk about your social media profile? So you've got Instagram now and their Facebook.
Yeah, so if you've got all those social media, you know, and I have them too, I just spend all my time on one because LinkedIn is the professional standard. That's where I hunt people. That's where everybody I know, you know, in my business hunts people. And, you know, because there are some modicum of them trying to keep it clean. You know what I'm saying? Two persons every second are joining LinkedIn. So that's about 1 million every 13 days. So, I mean, it's on a trajectory. I mean, how would you like every 2 seconds somebody looking at your website with what you offer? because out of the first million, you know, you're going to close at least 200 deals, you know,
right?
Which is like less than a thousandth of a percent, right? You know? But I mean, numbers matter here. So that is going to be the weapon of choice in the professional basis. I'm not saying the others don't play an important role depending on what you got, all that stuff. But hey, don't have any crap in there. Apple butter is brown and crap is brown, but you got to know the difference.
It's true. And I think, so with that, what you're really saying is too, be careful what you post.
That's correct.
Right? Be careful what you comment on. Because once it's there, it's there.
Yeah, I even learned my lesson. I had a good friend that in another country that commented on politics, and every once in a while I'd like it. And one time, you know, I was trying to, someone was saying, well, you know, hey, I want to work with you and all that kind of stuff. And we're getting to the point where, you know, I made the next call and he said, Joe, I don't want to work with you anymore. And it was all about something he saw that I liked or reacted to or something like that. And I never could get the specifics, but what it helped me do is, okay, I'm going to add another layer of being more careful on, you know, what I react to. There's no harm or foul for me to read it, assess it, you know, maybe, but I don't want to put my stamp
of approval, right,
anywhere.
I just said, what was the old mantra when we were kids growing up? Never talk about religion, politics. What's the third thing? There's three things you're not supposed to talk about on a first date. What's the third? Religion, politics.
Sex.
What is it? How can I not remember that? It's three things you're never supposed to talk about. Is it religion, politics? I don't know. We don't have to stop the podcast for that. So, but I got to remember that. Actually, if anyone's listening to the podcast, please comment on what the third thing is you're not supposed to talk about on a first date. It's religion, politics, and something else. I can't remember it. Jeez. Okay. So we're getting about 5 minutes till we got to wrap it up here. So when you're out there and guidance again, just kind of summarizing what you're sharing, have your social media platforms, but realize one aw shit wipes out 1,000 attaboys. Right. So you got to be careful. People are reading it.
Yeah. You can lose your reputation in a minute that you took, you know, your lifetime to build. And even if it's untrue, you know, you're going to spend time fixing that. In other words, you didn't do anything wrong, you know, but you've got to put the time and effort to do the salvage operation.
Perception is reality, right? As you're perceived as doing something, doesn't matter if you did it or not. It's just how it's perceived. I actually saw a cool post yesterday. Someone had, I think it was actually on Facebook, one of the groups I'm in. Someone had a picture of a sphere, but actually was in the shape of a cone or a roll, like a circle, like a tube, like almost like a toilet paper tube. But imagine it almost the same, almost like a square. So if you look at it this way, the circle or the tube is going through, it fits in the circle, but this way it fit through a square. So it's like, this is a circle. The same shape can be a circle and it can be a square. It depends on which way you're seeing it. I was like, dude, that's brilliant. It's the same thing, but it's perceived differently, and how you perceive it means so, so much. That being said, when you're out there now, think of your last two candidates that reached out to you or that were coming seeking your advice and guidance. What are you seeing, or what has been the biggest concern out there right now for veterans as they're coming into corporate America?
As they're coming into corporate America, as a veteran, you know, I always say, you know, you're fast, fluid, flexible, and responsive. Don't get caught up in, I want to work from home, all this other stuff right now, because if you're transitioning, what you want to do is you want to land, okay? And wherever you land is not going to be your final. I mean, the numbers don't say that you're going to land and be there forever. In other words, if you look at veterans in the first 3 years, probably 2.3 jobs, right? But the key is land somewhere, do everything you can to be excellent, right? And it's not like the military. You don't have a set of orders. After you do your year, you know, year and a half, then, hey, now you have a reputation in the civil world. So nobody's be looking back at the military other than you were honorably discharged. And you've got this track record that you're going to merchandise from the civilian world. And then it gets easier to matriculate between civilian organizations because somebody already took the risk on you. You succeeded. In other words, you didn't get fired and, you know, you have a positive reputation. People will check up on you. And then the world is your oyster.
Now, I think there's something deeper there that you said or touched on. And I think it's very, very true. And I'll ask, you've been out for 20 years, if you're seeing a difference in the mindset of veterans that were coming out when you were coming out, your own mindset versus the ones that are coming out today. Is it the same, would you say? Or is it different? So where I'm going, is it more, are you seeing the millennial mentality or the stereotype that, hey, all about me, what are you going to do for me? Where's my break room? Where's my video game? Where's my oxygen bar? Right? Where's all this stuff you're going to do for me? So you're so lucky to have me versus, hey, I want to be in a place where I can learn and grow and add and do and build my skill set. And I want to master this task. I may not love it, but I'm just going to give you everything I got so I can learn and grow. And then people will see that work ethic, that drive. And that's what's going to promote you, is the fact that you kicked ass in whatever that role was. You may not love that role, but doing that role, you control.
You just need to get along and matriculate, you know.
Matriculate. I'm a Marine. I don't know what matriculate means.
In other words, if you do well, hell, you can get promoted there. I mean, there's nothing wrong. You know, they want people that solve problems and people that fix things and get things done. I always use that thing. Look, mean what you say, say what you mean, but just don't say it mean.
You're a nice guy because you were a nice guy. I think when we chatted, you said you had an uncanny ability to take difficult situations and make these players play well together. You're calming. And I think I shared that with you before. Like, I enjoy your accent and the way you deliver. It's soothing because I'm a passionate, hyped up guy. I got my coffee and my pre-workout today, so I'm double amped up, you know, which is challenging in itself. But with that, let me ask you your thoughts on one final a bit of coaching or mentorship I received when I was coming out. I had a coach. He was the career coach. It was Michael Curry. He was a Vietnam era Marine, Sergeant Curry, Sergeant Michael Curry. I remember him. He's a nice guy, great guy. Unfortunately, we lost him a couple of years ago. He developed Parkinson's and actually Alzheimer's, sorry. And we lost him. Still friends with his daughter on Facebook, Renee Curry. Renee, if you're listening, how you doing? And he gave me this advice. You either go, if you're coming out and you're going into this is not really for the veteran entrepreneur, but this is if you're going out and you're trying to get your first gig. And if you need a couple gigs to then realize, hey, I can do this on my own and become an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
So get some corporate experience first.
Absolutely.
And then be the entrepreneur second. Okay, good. We're on the same page there.
Yeah.
He gave me this advice. If you're in sales, if you get hired for a sales gig, know that goal and your answer is what are you supposed to do? Whatever will help you accomplish that goal ethically in the sales side. If you're in management, all you have to do, if presented any opportunity or what should I do? Whatever's going to help your boss get promoted, make your boss look good, is what you do ethically. And so if everything you do makes your boss look good, you get your boss promoted. He's like, well, dude, you helped me get promoted. I'm bringing you with me. So if you're in management, he said, your only job in management is to get your boss promoted. Because if you help your boss get promoted, you're going to get promoted because your boss is getting promoted. What are your thoughts on that advice? That stuck with me for 20 plus years.
I even did this in the military is, okay, how do I make my boss's job easier?
You know,
if you get them to turn over more and more of that, then you learn how to operate at that level. And that freed him or her up to work on things other than the ankle biter stuff that just eats up your time. And if you can help take those ankle biter at the next level, that means you need to be proficient at your own so you can create time so you can help your boss. That occurs a lot, and there's nothing wrong with that, and you'll see that a lot. And even if your boss doesn't take you with you, at least he vouches for you when you go to the next organization for you to be at the next level.
That's prudent. And one last question. This has been great. I've really enjoyed it, Joe. For that employee that makes the mental switch, I'm a technical expert in whatever it is I'm doing. I'm not just an employee. I'm good at what I do. I can turn the skill set into a business. That's normally when, like myself, I was a skilled 401k practitioner at Merrill Lynch and UBS and realized I had the skill set. I can set up my own business, have my own shop, and no longer be just a technical expert. But then you're now going to be an entrepreneur and you make that shift. So what would be your parting thoughts or advice or guidance for any veteran that's in that spot where they have that passion, that glimmer, like, hey, I think I could do this on my own and do it better. And I want to launch my own. I would turn that employee hat to the entrepreneur hat. What would be your thoughts or guidance there?
It's all about planning. If you're staying in the corporate world, I always tell people, jump from one lily pad to the other lily pad. Don't get out of work. Always be in work, because everybody wants a entity that's working, right? It just sells better. So as far as the entrepreneur goes, just make sure your business plan, you've thought through the business plan. And from the standpoint of like, okay, who's going to, there's a lot of things that you have to do to run your own business. So who's going to do those things? And the more you think about that and solve the problem before you jump in the big pool, the better off it's going to be, because it's not your technical ability that's going to hamper you. It's going to be the odds and ends that seek your time because you weren't well prepared, because you're going to be the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker.
I think you're spot on with that. I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment, and I'll say, because you're polished, you've got your 30 years, every job had the next job lined up. And once you got through that initial fog of corporate America, you got set up and you had success there. I think at the same time, if you're in corporate America and something happens, in my industry, I have a lot of peers that are still with big firms that are big producers that would double their income, double their lifestyle if they left the big firm and would just set up their own shop. But they're so comfortable in that position. They're doing, for example, $1 million at a big wirehouse. You're only making $500,000, and that's W-2. You're taking home maybe 20 cents on the dollar, right? Maybe 20 cents on the dollar after taxes and all health and 401k and everything else. You would triple, if not quadruple, that on the outside as an independent. But they're comfortable, right? They don't want to go out. They don't want to take the change. They don't want to rock the boat. They don't want to build their own logo. They don't want to build a website. They don't want to get an accounting system. They don't want to get a phone system. They don't want to get HR and employee files. They don't want to do any of that. But sometimes then something happens, boom, boom, and you're forced. Hey, that ship is gone. Okay, here I am. I got to go and sink or swim.
That's exactly what I'll give you an example. So,
please.
I went to work where the search firm wanted to open an office in Houston, top 2% search firm. So we said, sure, but hey, this is an oil and gas town. Can you take the sine wave, because it goes up and down here, whether you like it or not. And, oh, yeah, we can. Yeah, okay. And so 2014 hits, and sure enough, oh, man, we can't take this anymore. And so, it's just a mess. We have to close the office. And so my partner and I put up our own shingle and continued to do that. Then Hurricane Harvey rolled in a little later and flooded our office with 7 feet of water.
Oh, wow. That's,
so he didn't want to set up another office. I didn't want. So we decided we're both moving to the house, and I remember, woe is me. I got to find some way to put this together. So, hey, it forced upon us. So I learned how to work from right here where I'm at and do stuff. So it took 6 months to, get all that stuff, like you want, and put your procedures and all that stuff together so it works for you. So then the pandemic rolls in here. And then I said, I don't think woe is me. I think, thank God I got this lesson in 2017, because now, business, tripled, because everybody needs help, both in consulting, transition, career development, all that kind of stuff. And I was organized and ready to handle the load. Thank God for unanswered prayers.
Right. So I think if I could summarize what you just shared, and then I'm asking for your contact information out there. Like, hey, if you can't have a plan, right, think through it ahead of time, have a plan, that's great. But guess what? What did Mike Tyson say? Everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face. And that happens too. And then so if you have that experience, fight or flight, you got to fight, right? As a veteran, you have the grit. But now as a veteran, if you're in that space, you're in that position, hopefully this network can help. And there is a huge network of veterans out there that have already gone through the sink or swim phase and they chose to fight. And here they are. Like, I'm one of them. There is a community out there. People can reach out and people want to help, right? I love to help. I love to give back. I love to share this information. I like to help people have better lives and improve their lives. And if I can help a veteran not have to learn the same lesson I did the hard way, it's a win for them and a win for me, because I have some lessons that nobody ever wants to go through. Trust me. So with that, Joe, I definitely appreciate you being on here. What's your final parting thought for me?
The final parting thought for any veteran out there is, okay, one of the hard lessons I had to learn was I chose to do this. It's a mission. I've got to accomplish this mission. you know, even my wife was telling me, you know, you've ridden this horse too long, you know, in one situation, and, you know, you're not going anywhere, you know, you need to rethink this. And so I finally read a book called The Dip. And that book gave me the permission, because every in the civilian world, you get into cul-de-sacs. In other words, you can't get out of the cul-de-sac except by backing out of the cul-de-sac, getting back out on the street, moving left or right, and then see if the street goes forward. So in civilian life, you're going to have cul-de-sacs. And don't think that, okay, somebody gave me a mission and I got to see it through to the death, because what your determination out here is, hey, is this financially sound? If it's not, or this is the not right town, get out of the cul-de-sac, move action left, action right.
I like that. So you're no longer in the tank, just driving forward through the neighborhood. Right. That's what I would do. This is great, Joe. So if someone wants to reach out to you, how do they reach you? What's your email, phone number, and website?
Joseph.Frankie, like Frankie and Johnny, at Gmail. And the website, www.jfiiiassociates.com. That's for JF the third, but III is what it is.
That's okay. Okay. And your phone number?
817-905-5071. And our book out there is The 5-Minute Drill for Executive Networking Success, called LinkedIn, The 5-Minute Drill for Executive Networking Success. And it's 4.9 out of 5.0 on Amazon. It's doing really well. And it's even being used in high school business classes, because it's a 1-hour read.
Say the name of the book one more time, so everyone has it.
LinkedIn, The 5-Minute Drill for Executive Networking Success.
I love it. Well, Joe, thanks so much for being on the podcast today. I'm Brett Henderson. If anyone wants to reach out to me, I'm Brett@SWE90.com. Brett@SWE90.com, and our website's SWE90.com, Strategic Wealth Endeavor. This is great. Joe, a lot of good tidbits there. Thanks so much for coming, brother.
Hey, it was a blast. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'll do it again soon.
Thank you for listening to the Veteran Entrepreneur Masterclass podcast. Don't forget to click the follow button to become notified when new episodes become available. Securities offered through IFP Securities LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners, IFP, member FINRA, and SIPC. Investment advice offered through IFP Investors LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners, IFP, a registered investment advisor. IFP and Strategic Wealth Endeavor INC are not affiliated. The views expressed are that of the host and are for informational purposes only, and in no event should be construed as an offer to buy or sell securities. Opinions expressed are subject to change without notice and do not take into account the particular investment objectives, financial situation, or needs of individual investors. Neither IFP Investors LLC, IFP Securities LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners, IFP, nor their affiliates offer tax or legal advice. Interested parties are strongly encouraged to seek advice from qualified tax and/or legal experts regarding the best options for your particular circumstances. The information given herein is taken from sources that IFP Advisors LLC, DBA Independent Financial Partners.